What's up, everybody? I'm Matt. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you to the home group for having me. It's definitely an honor. It's pretty crazy. You guys get to hear me talk for an hour. There was definitely a point where nobody wanted to hear me say anything, and honestly, I probably wouldn't have had anything good to say anyway. I had a stressful situation I just want to talk about real quick before I got here today. Definitely won't bore you with it, but long story short, I had to leave a job site early. And it'll tie in. I told them I had to go speak at an AA meeting, and I'm fortunate enough to where, like, everybody at my job knows I'm sober. And this one guy was in charge of this job site, right? Like, wasn't okay with me going. And it's funny, like, how quick, like, ego can come right back into play, because I'm like, well, who the hell are you to talk to me like that? And who are you to tell me I can't go? And I leave, right? And instantly he calls the owner of my company, and I get a call from him, and I'm talking to him, and again, it's funny, just like that mentality can switch so quick, because, like, instantly I'm like, well, I'm going to have to kill this guy, he snitched on me, right? And it's so funny, like, instantly I'm running through six different situations how I can end his life. And then I'm resorting back to, what we learn here, right? We're taught to pray, pray for others. And when you're resentful, you pray. And I open the book, right? And I open right to the page where it talks about love and tolerance for others. That's our code, right? And what a beautiful thing, man. What a beautiful thing. AA has afforded me a really good life today. I just celebrated 2 years, February 17th, which is nothing short of a miracle. I tried to do this for 5 years prior, in a different fellowship, and I couldn't get it.
As a kid, right? Like, it's funny, like, what we suffer from. Like, I look at it as, like, a disease of perception, right? Like, how my perception of my life changed,
throughout my life, really, when I was young and, and a little kid, like, I looked at my life like it was the greatest thing ever. Like, I had this older brother who I thought was the greatest thing, and I had a younger sister, and I had a really good family. Like, I grew up in a really good household. And then it's funny, like, how that perception changes. In third grade, I took my first drink, and it wasn't long after that I thought I, had it really rough. Right. And it wasn't the case at all. I was just this young, dumb little kid who, like, I had this older brother that, like, I wanted to be just like more than anything in the world. And, I wanted him to accept me, and I knew he did certain things. So I thought, like, if I did these things that, I guess I would fit in. Right. And it wasn't like that at all. If anything, he probably just looked at me more like a little dumbass. From third to fifth grade, I got caught, drinking in fifth grade. And I'll never forget, like, my parents looking at me like their baby boy, right? How are you doing this at such a young age? And I hung out with older guys, throughout the neighborhood. I was attracted to it. I was attracted to doing things that gave me a rush or doing things I wasn't supposed to do. It wasn't much of a big choice. Like, I was already into it before I even know what it was, So I remember in fifth grade, right? Like, I got in trouble, I got caught, and I got grounded, so I stopped drinking. And then I think seventh grade came around, started right back up again, middle school, was hanging out with friends, and I'm definitely not one to say that, like, it wasn't fun at a point, a lot of it was fun. To tell you the truth, I think coming into the rooms the first time, like, killed that every time ever since. So due to another fellowship, it actually ruined the fun of drinking, and which is okay. It took me a while to understand that, like, I need to be here. At the time, I didn't get it. And I'm extremely grateful to be here.
So like all through middle school and through high school, right? Like I'm drinking, doing my thing. I was into skateboarding a lot, and you know, we'd skip school and go down the city and party, and you know, I thought I was living life, you know, and this whole time again, like I'm trying to build this relationship with my brother, and wasn't working for a long time, and eventually me and him had taken this trip to California, and me and him were over there, got to do some things, got introduced to some things, and you know, we had like hit it off, right? Like ever since. And it was like that I've arrived moment for me. Like it was probably the greatest thing in my life at the time I could have ever thought would have happened. And so like throughout high school, right, like I get introduced to some other things, and you know, life's still good. Like, you know, it's like one giant party. I'm just this young kid. I have nothing else going on. And at the time, like, I didn't see anything wrong with it, right? And very selfish in everything I do and say and how I think. I mean, it was all about me. It was like partying, drugs, alcohol, and then like everything else, if it even made the list. And, you know, like I remember, like, again, like I'll talk about this perception, right? Like I remember I had this huge resentment against my father. Thought he was the worst man ever. You know, he wanted me to like go to college and like get a good job. And, you know, I wanted to like do nothing, sell drugs and drink all day, every day. And I thought, what an asshole for not letting me do that. Right? Like I couldn't see it. I really, this is God's honest truth. Like I thought I was right. Right, so like there was a long time where like I just got this idea that he must hate me, you know, and very early on, like starting to play that victim mentality, and I didn't know it at the time, but absolutely what I was doing, right? So life's going on like that, right, for a little while, and you know, we're making decent money, doing what we're doing, and you know, life's all fun. Then it comes to a screeching halt when my brother gets arrested, right? And all up to this point, like I couldn't think for myself. I mean, he did all the thinking. I left every decision up to him. It was like, whatever you want, I'm good with. You know, so like when he was gone, I was left broken. Like I was empty. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to live. You know, I was really lost, man. It was the first time I tried to get sober, and I actually did. I detoxed on a couch for 2 weeks, you know, and it was the first time I ever tried to do that, right? And, like, if anybody's ever detoxed before, you know, not the funnest thing in the world. So I thought, like, you know, like, that's it. I'm never going to do this again. Like, this sucks. I've never had to do it before. But it turned out like the detectives knew I was involved in what was going on. So I thought I was going to jail. So I'm like, well, I better sober up because I don't want to go into jail with a habit. And I get sober, right? Like for like 3 weeks. And, you know, so I'm like, well, I can't drink liquor anymore, but like I can definitely drink beer, right? Like as soon as I felt a little better, I go to this party. Down at Temple, and I'm drinking beer. Somebody's like, hey, you want a shot of Jack Daniels? Instantly take it, not even a question, you know what I mean? And I'm right back to where I was, you know, probably just as bad, if not worse, in a matter of like 4 days. And my brother ends up coming home after a while, right? And he's sober, and he's talking about these meetings, and you know, he's got like some friends now besides me, and I'm like jealous and I'm resentful, and I'm still like this lost little boy who like doesn't know how to live, doesn't know how to speak for himself, couldn't form two sentences. You know, I remember like he'd, you know, try and like get me into it, right? And I just wasn't like, you know, he'd come at me with this like serenity and spirituality, and I'm like, keep that shit to yourself, and I'll keep my drugs, my alcohol, and we'll go our separate ways, you know. And I was completely good with that for a while. And But then things started to get bad. Like I knew I couldn't sell what I was selling anymore, right? But like I had to support my habit somehow. So I started robbing and stealing, and not like, you know, like some gangster ass dudes. Like I, you know, from the people that loved me the most, man, the people that would love me, I knew would love me no matter what. You know, I was stealing from my family, my friends. You know, eventually I stopped getting invited to parties. So like eventually I was left alone. You know, and so I remember my mother had confronted me, and she was like, hey, man, like, I know you're taking stuff from me, and in all honesty, I just didn't want to get in trouble, so I'm like, hey, you're right, I got a problem, let's try and do something about it. It was the first time I went to rehab. I was 20 years old, it was a week before my 21st birthday, so I go in, right, and it was a good experience. Didn't really learn much, but, you know, felt great to be sober for 30 days. You know what I mean? It felt good. And, you know, I started to get that initial, like, gut laugh. Like, you get when you get sober, that, like, that real laugh, like, you just can't have it when you're out there. And I don't know if, like, I guess I just wasn't ready. If that's what you want to call it. I think I was ignorant as to what I actually suffered from. You know, so there was like, I was still defenseless. You know what I mean? Like I'd go to these meetings in a different fellowship and I'd sit there and I'd talk about my problems and, you know, it'd feel good for that hour. But then I was left with 23, outside, you know, and I didn't know how to deal with certain situations that would arise. And slowly but surely, obsession meant opportunity. And I was right back at it. And that cycle had continued for about 5 years, trying to get into the rooms, not getting into the rooms. And the whole time I'm hiding it, you know what I mean? Like eventually it would come out. I mean, you can only lose so much weight, look so pale. You know, and like be picking yourself to death, before somebody asks you what the hell's going on. You know, and I'm like, oh, I'm fine. So it goes on like that, right? And I go to a second rehab and, I do pretty good, right? And, I always do good when I'm away from home, and I keep thinking, right, like I need to follow my brother. Like it's still this, like, crutch I'm leaning on, and you know, it's just like, I don't know, I guess I just like, I set myself up for it, you know, like from childhood, I thought everything he did was right, you know, and I never went to like go find my own path. And you know, so I go back to this fellowship, right, and this other fellowship, and a couple months down the line, back at it again, right? And like I catch this habit that like I never had before, and I got miserable like real quick, real fast, real quick. And so things are going bad, right? And I'm alone by myself again, you know, and all hope is gone at this point. And for about 2 weeks I was on probation. Back when I was saying about my brother getting arrested, eventually charges did get drawn up on me. I had to go to this program called Diacon, where they make you hike through the Appalachian Trail for a month, and it reduces a felony down to a misdemeanor if you have the money to pay for it. It wasn't cheap. And so eventually, I was on probation for about 3 years, and there was this one week where, like, I knew my PO was supposed to come, and I was, like, as bad as I ever was, and I didn't want her to come, so I'm, like, emailing her, like, hey, can we reschedule? And she doesn't answer, and, like, an hour goes by, and I'm, like, bugging out at this point because I'm, like, going through it, and, like, I need her to answer so I can definitely go do what I got to do and, like, be all right. So I emailed her again after an hour, and she still didn't answer. And I swear I waited like 30 minutes, and I emailed her again, and she sent me this email like, dude, I feel like you're like stalking me. Relax, we can reschedule, right? And like, I didn't even think to ask her, like, for a date, and thank God, but, like, I didn't ask her for a date as to when we were going to do it, and so it's, like, week led up to this, right? Like, I was at this point where I was, like, so deep into my thing, and I was, like, going to bed every night, like, either praying that, like, this was going to kill me, or, like, somebody was going to back me into a corner that, like, I couldn't get out of. Because I was too ashamed and too scared to admit what I was doing, right? Like, my whole life filled with fear, you know, and, like, it's funny, like, how you learn that later. Like, I never would have known that. Like, I thought I was, like, tough for, like, wanting to die, like, as weird as that sounds. So eventually that prayer gets answered, right? Like, that PO does show up, and, automatic, like, I'm not even living at my dad. She thinks I'm living at my dad's house. I'm living at my mom's. And she calls. She's like, "Hey, I'm out front. Come out." And I'm like, "Okay." And my mom lives right around the corner. And it had snowed like 2 feet. And I'm in like shorts, like basketball shorts, a shirt, and like slippers. And I like booked it through the snow, like across the street. And she's looking at me like, "What the hell?" And again, I'm like, I'm already like a skinny dude. Like, I'm like, you know, 100 pounds at best, and like so pale. And we sit down, and she whips out this test, and I'm like, "You might as well just put that thing away. I'm gonna fail that." And I'm trying to be quiet. Like my brother was home in the other room, and he was working from home. And I'm trying to be quiet. Like, for some reason, I thought she'd like keep it between me and her. And but this is like the third time I've messed up on probation. Both other times I like called her from rehab. You know, she's like, "All right, well, you're gonna have to go to rehab." And I'm like, "Well, I can't afford that, right?" And seriously, like, it made so much sense. Like, I was so sure that she was gonna like be like, "Okay, you can try on the street," you know, like, and I thought like for sure she was gonna let me try and like detox at home. And she's like, "Well, you gotta report to jail then by 8 o'clock and I'm like, "Hold the phone, you know, I'll figure out the rehab." And she's like, "Absolutely." She's like, "Absolutely not. Report to box," right? She wasn't going for it. And so I'm like, "Shit, man." And it's funny, too, is it was like, I was like sad, you know, like, "Damn, this sucks." And I was like only sad because I was like scared. I'd never been to jail. And I was just in like the worst place in my life I'd ever been, you know, in the 23 years I've been alive. I remember this, like, I was like sad and I was broken, but I was like relieved, right? Like, I knew that like tomorrow it's going to suck, but like, I don't have to wake up and do what I've been doing, you know? And that was like a huge relief to me. And, so like, I remember I was going home. I went to go tell my mom, right? And she's like crying, she's upset. And, you know, she's looking at me like, "You don't even look upset." And like, I don't think it hit me yet, but like, I was upset, and I just told her, like, "I'm just happy. I don't have to do what I've been doing." And I called my dad, and he's like, "Do me a favor, just don't come home, because you're a bother to everybody's life," right? And he wasn't wrong, you know. He was on the verge, he was getting remarried. His wife was questioning whether she wanted to do it or not. She never had kids. Comes into like a two-ring circus between me and my brother in our prime. And, you know, she got like a real dose of like what unconditional love has to mean. And, you know, so he says, "Don't come home," right? "Do us all a favor and don't come home." And I was like, "Okay." And I had nothing else to say to that. And, wasn't mad. I was just like, whatever. It's like the least of my problems right now. And, so I remember, right, like, I was going to, my brother actually, he took me. He was home working. He's like, "I'll drop you off. Come on." And I remember, like it hit me, right? Like, he had been sober for, like, 4 years at the time. And we're on the way there, and I just start crying. You know, I was, like, I was genuinely sad because I was so convinced that, like, for some reason, I'm not supposed to be sober. I'm supposed to die this way. You know, and that really hit home. And I really believed it,
You know what I mean? Like, I was so convinced. Like, I was like, dude, I've tried. I've really tried, and I can't do it. You know, I'm looking at him like, how do you do it? And, you know, so, I mean, that was that, man. Like, I went in there with every ounce of me, like, believe that, like, this was just going to be my life. Like, at best, this is what it's going to end up. Worst case, 6 feet under. And, like, that was, like, a tough pill to swallow. But, like, 2 days later when I was withdrawing, I forgot all about it. I just wanted that to be over. And I wasn't there for long at all. It was, like, a timeout. I was there for, like, 3 weeks, maybe two. And I still, to this day, worst experience of my life. You know, like, I don't, you know, some people, I don't know how you do it for years or months. That place sucked. Absolutely. The most lonely and depressing thing I've ever done in my life. And on top of it, I was withdrawing from a habit that, like, I've never had before. And I would have been happy if somebody had, like, shanked me in the stomach or something. Like, I would have been good with that. And eventually, though, right, like, you start to feel better. And, you know, and then, time came where, like, I was getting released, and I didn't talk to nobody the whole time I was there. I saw one dude I happen to know, but besides that, I didn't talk to anybody. I just wanted to leave, and so I come out, right, and, like, my hands are up, dude. Like, it is the first time in my life, like, I feel like I've surrendered. Like, I am out of ideas. Like, I thought I knew. Clearly, I do not, right? It was my first surrender I've ever had, complete surrender anyway. And you know, I go home, and, you know, again, like, that father, right, like, who hates me, comes and picks me up from the jail, and he takes me out to Outback right away. And, you know, he's gives me a big hug, and, you know, I still have this, like, idea that, like, he just doesn't like me. And, you know, and I can't see why, right? Like, for the last, like, 10 years, I've made his life a living hell and cost him probably, you know, 50 grand. And I can't see why he would feel any type of way toward me. You know, so he picks me up, right? And go to Outback, and it was, like, the greatest meal ever. And go home, and I remember, like, he wouldn't let me leave. Like, no matter what, he wouldn't let me leave the house. And, which, like, I hated, but, like, you would have thought I'd be, like, grateful, but, like, I still hated. And so I think the next day my PO comes, and, you know, me, her, and my father all have a sit down, and, you know, he tells me, he's like, dude, he's like, you're too old for me to ground you anymore. He's like, well, what do you want to do? Right? And everybody had been trying to tell me to go to these recovery houses, and I'm like, well, maybe I should try the recovery house, right? Because again, like, I'm out of my ideas. And don't get me wrong, I was, like, really scared to go to this house, right? Like, I'd never been out of mom and dad's house before, you know? I relied on them for everything. And again, like, if you would have asked me a couple weeks before that, I would have told you that, like, I provided for myself with everything in my life. And it was just so not true. Like, they damn near bought everything I was doing anyway. So, you know, so my PO, right, she assigns me to have to go to a recovery house for 90 days. And it was actually kind of hard to get into one. Like, I remember I called, like, 10 of them before one finally let me in. I had a girlfriend before I went into jail, and I remember telling her, like, she happened to be over too. For some reason, it was like everybody in my life happened to be at the house this day when I found out I had to go to jail. So I went up and told her, and she was like, well, we're done, right? And I'm like, really? And, you know, like, I like, and it's just fun. Like, it's fun. Now it's funny. At the time, it wasn't. You know, like, I just couldn't see, like, me, you're going to leave me? So I have to go to this recovery house, right? And she lived in Levittown, and we were still broken up at the time, and, you know, so again, like, instantly, I'm trying to scheme, right? Like, I'm looking to see, like, what's the closest one to her house. And I never told nobody that, but this guy, you know, I finally got a hold of somebody, and he was willing to have me come in, and he convinced me to go to this other house, right? I had to go to this place called the Cedar House in Croydon. And
I was scared to death, man. Like, I got brought there in the middle of the day, right? And I actually thought, so the house held 27, it slept 27 dudes. So I went into a four-man room. I slept on a top bunk for 4 months. But when I got dropped off there, nobody was home. And this, it doesn't look like a house. It's like, it's literally in, it was an old nightclub that they turned into a recovery house. So that was already weird. And then I walked in, and there was three people home. One guy was schizophrenic. The other guy had like the mentality of a 13-year-old, but he was like 20. And the other guy had PTSD. So I like, seriously, I thought I'd like check myself into a mental institution on accident. I'm like, because I'm looking around at these people and they're like talking to themselves, and I'm like, oh my God, dude. I'm like, could you really be that dumb? Did you go to the wrong place? And I had already signed in at this point, so like I was in for the long haul. And I found out everybody came home, so like I found out there was a couple, you know, just people like me, I guess. You know, like like I'm any better than anybody else. You know, so instantly, right, like I come in and I'm talking to this house manager, and he was super intense for some weird reason. I'm like a super friendly guy, like I don't come off as trying to challenge you or anything. And this dude was like, well, I'm not your mom and dad, like if we got a problem we can take it out back. And I'm like, I've like literally haven't even brought my clothes to my room yet, so like I don't know what kind of problems we're having already. And, I was like, I'm trying to just do good. And, but he ended up being a good guy. I get to know these people, right? And again, like, I'm in this new environment, and, I'm really scared, man. Like, I don't know how to live at this point. Like, I don't know how to live sober. I don't know how to live not sober. And I'm like this scared little child, right? That's like coming into this whole new world. And, so I go back to this fellowship I was going to, right? And I remember, like, before I left to go to this recovery house, somebody said, like, hey, don't be scared to, like, go explore what other fellowships are out there. Maybe you'll find something somewhere else. And I was like, okay, I don't think so. I know what my problem is, right? And, again, just ignorant at this point. And so I'm going to this other fellowship again, the one I've been trying for the last 5 years, and I'm sitting there, and I'm not getting any better, right? Like, I'm still, like, a really sick dude, and, like, I'm still really depressed, and I still want to die, and, like, I'm sober for, like, a month and a half at this point, you know, I'm still sharing my same problems, and, you know, it's not getting any better, right? And I'm not hearing any solution. Right. And so eventually get this moment of clarity. Right. Like, I'm doing my first step for like the 100th time in this other fellowship. And this moment of clarity hits me of like, damn, you've done this quite a few times now. Like, these answers still aren't changing. Why don't you just see what else is it? What do you say? You know, what do you have to lose now? And so I go. I go to a CA meeting, right? So I know they do their steps out of the big book. I thought, you know, maybe I'll get something out of that. But, like, I can still talk about a huge part of my problem at the same time, right? And so I go to this meeting, right? And from the floor, like, I shared, you know, my name's Matt. I'm new here. I feel like a scared little child. I have no idea how to live. All I want to do is die. And I'm looking to learn how to live. If anybody could help me, please talk to me after the meeting. And this meeting was filled with like 100 people, and literally only one person out of this whole meeting offers me any help, right? And it was a guy I used to work for that I resented as well, right? Because he would tell me the truth about me, right? Like, at a time where I didn't want to hear it, I couldn't hear it. And it's funny, right? Like, I'm like in tears sharing this, right? Like, cause it's real. Those feelings are real. Like, I'll be okay if I don't wake up. You know, everybody would be better off without me, right? Like, really stuck in this like victim mentality. Cause I don't know any better at the time. And You know, so, and it's funny, like, how instantly, like, your ego comes back. Like, I'm like, yeah, we'll see about that, pal. You know, when he asked me if he wants me to sponsor, or if he can sponsor me, you know, and like I'd be doing him a favor. And, you know, so I'm like, I'm telling these guys back at my house, and they're like, you dummy, you call him right now and tell him, like, absolutely, and you start going through the steps. So I'm like, oh, whatever. So I call him up, you know, and I'm like, hey, you know, I guess we can do that. And, like, thank God he's a better man than me, you know what I mean? Because I just did not see it that way at the time. Like, there was, like, a time where, like, I would have loved to kill him. And now, like, I would kill for him, absolutely. And so we start meeting up, right? Like, here's this, like, worthless, you know, waste of space. It was me. You know, like, does nothing but help himself all the time. And, you know, this man takes time out of his day, and he comes and meets me once a week, every week. And one of the greatest things, too, I thought, when I called him and, you know, I said, well, how does this work? Do I got to call you every day? He's like, absolutely not. I have a life. He's like, I don't want to hear, you know, what's all your bullshit all day, every day. And I'm like, thank God. I don't want to tell you. You know what I mean? So we start going through these steps, right? And he teaches me what it means to be an alcoholic. Like, I learn, you know, that, like, on top of the mental obsession, the obsession of the body and mind, spiritual malady, right? Like, I never heard that before. And he tells me, like, you know that empty feeling, like, you have in your gut, even though, like, you get sober and, like, you feel good for a little bit, yet, like, it always comes back, that, like, huge hole. He's like, yeah, that's a spiritual malady. He's like, you're suffering from a spiritual malady. And he tells me about the allergy, right? Like, he's like, yeah, man, like, you react differently when you put something in your body than other people do. He's like, you know, like, when you would go to dinner with your girlfriend who's Italian and she would have one glass of wine, barely finish it, and then, like, on top of it, hand you the keys because she drank a little bit. And I'm like, yeah, that's weird, isn't it? And, you know, because, like, to me, I'm thinking, like, A, why do you even buy the thing if you're not going to drink it? And B, like, how are you not three more deep? And then on top of it, how are we not going down to the block right now? And, you know, and I always thought that was the oddest thing. He's like, well, that's you know, that's what the allergy is. He's like, you react differently when you put these in your, something like this in your body. Right, and he said that once you start, you can't stop. Right, and I'm like, well, that makes sense. Like, nobody ever told me that before. That's why, like, I always thought I could, like, do it once, cruise under the radar, and nobody would find out. Yet, like, 6 months down the line, when I've been collecting key tags, and, you know, somehow I'm getting skinnier. You know, everybody's like, what's up? You know, that's how they found out, you know, and I never knew that, man. I never knew that as, and you might think it's funny, but I'm dead serious. Like, I had no idea, you know, I had no idea. Nobody had ever broken it down to me like that before. You know, so, and then I learned, like, it, you know, it can also go into a sober life too. Right, like, I've experienced that when you know, I'm not practicing principles and I'm filling it with other things, like women that I use, and when I buy stuff like crazy, I do everything alcoholically. Like, I, for example, like, I got approved about 2 months ago, right, to buy a gun, right? Like, they let me buy a gun, and thought it was the greatest thing ever. So I buy a pistol, right? And then a week later, I bought an AR-15. Right, like, what an alcoholic. You know, there's, like, nothing more that would describe that. You know, it's just like, what, it's how everything I do, and, like, it's like I constantly have to check myself. And so we're going through, right, and we go to the second step, and he asks me, he's like, well, can you, you know, this is when God comes into play, and I'm, you know, not this huge fan of God either. And you know, he's like, because I'm thinking, like, well, God never provided me with, like, an unlimited supply of alcohol and an unlimited supply of women, so how could he possibly exist, you know? And at the time, it made complete sense. And, you know, but here I am, broken, ready to die, and this man looks alive, you know what I mean? He looks a lot better off than me, and, like, he was like all bug eye when he was like, can you believe that I believe? And he looked like if I said no, like he might hit me. So I'm like, yeah, definitely, you know? And I could tell, like I was like, I had been sober enough to where I could tell there was something different in his eyes than there were in mine. You know, absolutely. And so we go to this third step, right? And so he teaches me a third step prayer. And he's like, do this tonight. And he's like, I promise you, he's like, something's going to happen in your life. We're no longer going to question the existence of God working in your life. And he's like, it's going to go so far that like you're going to be able to see that God had worked in your life this whole time. The whole time you fought everything to deny him, you're going to see that he's been there. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I felt really awkward, man, doing it. But like I had nothing to lose. So I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try, you know. And I remember at the time I was working in Paoli, and I was taking the train from Croydon to Paoli every day. It was like two trains. You had to get off down at Drexel, hop on another one. And I had the same routine every morning, right? But this morning, I learned that third step prayer the night before, and I get up and I say that third step prayer, and I meant it. You know what I mean? Like I meant it with all my heart. And I didn't know what I was talking to, and it felt really awkward, you know, like I felt weird, like talking to myself, and I go on about my day, right? So like I take this train into whatever it's down to Drexel, and I'd have the same routine every morning, right? I'm not a morning person, so I wouldn't talk to anybody. If anybody has ever been there in the morning on a weekday, it's extremely busy all the time. Do the same thing every morning. I go get a coffee, go have a cigarette, and then go wait for my train. And for whatever reason, this particular morning when I said that third step prayer, I asked, please God, put somebody in my life I can help so I don't have to think about me today. And I get there, right, and I go out, I get my coffee, and I'm smoking a cigarette. And this dude comes walking up, right, and this is in a city filled with place filled with people, and comes walking up, and he asked me for a lighter for a cigarette, and I'm like, sure, you know, I give it to him. And he goes walking up the street, and all of a sudden, he turns back around, and starts talking. I'm listening to my headphones, take my headphones out. I'm like, what are you saying? And he starts telling me, right, for whatever reason, complete stranger, starts telling me how he's been living on the street homeless because he can't get sober, right? And we got to have like this 20-minute conversation about how like, A, I had prayed for this to happen this morning, so this is the craziest thing that's ever happened in my life. You know, it was literally like God had reached down and slapped me in the face and was like, here I am, you know, you cannot deny me no more. And it was actually funny, like I was so blown away, still gives me the chills. I was so blown away. I'd like taken a step back. He probably thought it was so weird. I had this like giant smile on my face. But we got to talk, man. We got to talk about a program and what he could do to get off the street. And what he decided to do with that information is between him and whatever he believes in, right? But like the point is like that was proof, man. Like I had prayed for that. I've never done that in my life before, and I prayed for that morning, and it happened. Thank God, because seriously, I was at a point to where like this was the make or break. Like I told my sponsor, I'm gonna do everything to the best of my ability, but like if this doesn't work, I'm leaving. I'm never coming back, because I'm not starting over again. And so I called my sponsor instantly, and I said, hey man, if you didn't just set me up, I am all in, you know? I said, I'm in. I will not fight you on a single thing no more. And he said, okay. And it was just funny, man. Like that love was real. Like it was there. You know what I mean? Like I felt the presence of God, you know, in a very godless life. I had a very godless life my whole life. You know, like it was all centered around me. You know, I never thought anything like that would ever make me feel good. Anything to do with it. I didn't want it. And so we go on to a fourth step, right? And they talk about, this dreaded fourth step. And definitely not as bad as everybody made it out to be, you know? I feel like whoever says it's bad probably never did one before. Because it's the same stuff I would, like, bullshit and, like, brag about with all the people back at the house anyway. I just sat down on a more serious note and talked about it with another man. And, he related, man. Like, he let me know that, like, hey, I know you feel like you're horrible for these things, but look, like, I did this here, I did that there, and, you know, we're not so different, you know. And we did that fifth step, and then he had me do this, like, hour meditation, right? He said it completed my fifth step, and he said, I want you to read this over with the God you've been praying to. He said, call me after, and I said, okay. And, I meditated. I tried to meditate for an hour, and I fell asleep about 30 minutes in. And I was real down on myself about it, right? And I didn't realize it till later, and he didn't tell me till later. And it made sense at the time. He said, dude, he's like, remember when you told me you fell asleep during your fifth step? He's like, that was the first time your mind probably had shut off. He's like, you were free for a moment. You know, it was stopped, all those wheels stopped turning. You were able to just be you, be in the moment, and be calm. You know, I was like, wow. You know, and he was right. Like, I remember feeling this, like, huge weight was off me. Like, this stuff I thought I was going to die with, like, take to the grave that I was never going to tell anybody, right? And so we do 6 and 7, and he was a little blunt with it. He told me, I'm not going to have you write a list of all your character defects. They're very obvious from your fourth step. He's like, I got bad news for you. You have them all. He's like, we're not going to make a list. He's like, you're just going to be more aware of when things like what's on your fourth step come up into your life. You know, and I was like, all right, dick. And, so then we do an eighth step, right? And I take this list right from my fourth step, and and he tells me, like, you're gonna start making amends, and he's like, I want you to start with your brother and your sister, right? And I had built this resentment against my brother, who, like, I felt had never let me grow up, right? Like, all the while, like, I wanted him to do what he was doing anyway, so, like, it was really nothing. He didn't do anything. He just did what I asked him. You know, and I let it continue to happen. Like, I had no idea how to live. I had no idea how to be a man. I had no idea how to take care of myself. And, you know, that was because of my selfish and self-centered fear that I put on everybody. I blamed it on everybody, right? And so I got to make this amends to my brother, and he was sober at the time. He got to do his amends back, which was awesome. It was a really freeing experience. And then I got to do it with my sister. And she's not sober, doesn't need to be sober. And she kind of laid into me. She's not she's not as soft-hearted as me and my brother. But you know, it was good either way. It went really well. And the next one, man, was the biggest one, biggest resentment I've had thus far was my father. And again, for no other reason than what I perceived was happening, you know, so I had to go back to him and be like, hey, you know, all those times you vouched for me when people were missing money, yeah, that was me. I stole that. You know, and I just want you to know all those times I thought you were the biggest a-hole for, you know, not letting me, like, sell drugs, drink, and party out of your house, and God forbid you wanted me to go to college and get a good job and live a successful life. I admit I was a little off, you know, and I'm kidding. You know, I told him, like, you know, that was extremely, extremely ignorant of me. You know, I said I was completely wrong, and, you know, I told him, I said, I'm not here to apologize. I know you're tired of hearing that. I said, you know, can you forgive me? Is there anything I left out, and how can I make it right? You know, and he was so good about it. You know what I mean? This is a man, like, I did not want to talk to, the same man that told me, don't come home, you know, and he was so good about it. And, man, that was a relief, right? And, like, that felt so good. And I was on fire, man. Like, I felt really, really good. Like, I felt really free for the first time in my whole life. And so I go continue. I'm making these amends, and everything's going good. And I eventually go on to a 10th step, right?
and my sponsor teaches me about the maintenance steps, and he tells me these are the steps that like keep you in check, so like we don't have to do 1 through 9 again. And you know, he tells me about how making a 10-step is like a quick amends, you know, one on the spot if need be. And like, good thing he did, because definitely throughout 2 years I have not been perfect, not even close. And you know, there's been quite a few times where like, you know, I've made that 10-step. And let me just say too, one thing like out of that 9-step, right, like I got was like, I no longer felt like I was like lying about me anymore. You know what I mean? Like I was free to the entire world. Like I didn't have to walk around like with my head held down and my eyes at the floor. Like I could look people in the eye and know that like I'm not lying about a single thing today. You know, like this is me and this is who you get. And like I'm okay with me today. And it was so freeing. Like I was like, not like a cocky way, just like I felt really good just to be me. You know, like I was comfortable in my own skin. You know, and that was probably the greatest thing I could have ever gotten from an amends. You know, like it totally changed me, because there was a time to where like staying up here for an hour just was not happening ever. I probably wouldn't even talk to you, you know, like not out of like not wanting to, out of like I couldn't, you know, like I could not form the conversation. And so anyway, we do this 11th, we go over an 11th step, right? And he teaches me about this inventory you do every night. And you know, what another great thing, man, for like when I don't want to make that amends, I don't want to do that 10th step, you know, and I got to check myself again at night, or like maybe something brushed by me that I didn't really catch. And then that meditation, it comes up, you know. And then we go on to 12, right? And getting to sit with another guy, not only that, like just getting to the thought that anybody would even think that like I could break down something that they might want to hear, or I don't know, it still blows me away that like somebody else would want to hear anything I have to say. You know, and getting to see that light turn on for somebody else, like, is like, I can't put that into words, but it's something that like I hope everybody does or will or has felt at some point. That's a miracle, man. Like that's the miracle, right? Like, you know, sometimes you question, or like I'll think, right? Like, and it's honestly, it's when I'm in that again, like, because it comes back, that victim mentality, that gross mentality I hate, you know, and I ask, like, man, why me, you know? And then, like, that night, I'm sitting with a sponsee, and we're going over this book, and, you know, it's like, God, man, like, if I wasn't here, if my sponsor wasn't here, then what, you know? Like, where would all these people be, all these beautiful people? You know what I mean? That like have so much to offer the world, and for so long, like I pissed on everything, every opportunity I've ever had. And you know, it's just like such a non-sacrifice to be able to give that time back to somebody, you know. And it's awesome, man. And you know, my life has been up and down in 2 years. I've gone through, nobody promised me like everything was going to be great all the time, and it definitely hasn't been, you know what I mean? But like, thankfully I'm blessed enough that like with a God in my life, I've learned like some principles that like when times are tough, like it's my first resort isn't to turn to a drink. You know what I mean? I have other tools as to like how I can go about getting out of myself. You know, and like, whoever would have thought that like it'd be helping somebody, you know? Like, to me, I, you know, it's like, how does that even make sense? But it's like, it's so true. You know, you all of a sudden, like your problems, like I feel like I'm the master at blowing things out of proportion. Like I'll take something very small and it's this big. And then when I get to sit or just listen to somebody else, you know, all of a sudden it's this big, and eventually it goes away or it works itself out, you know? And that's the miracle we get here. And my life is truly a miracle today. You know, there was a point where like I was 100% positive that I was going to die in active addiction, active alcoholism.
And I thought there was no coming back. And now it's just, you know, not, I know that like that that's always there, but like, you know, there's also a part that's like, man, you have all these other ways. It's the fact that it's not the first thought anymore is the miracle, right? Like for 2 years, you know, I've not obsessed about a drink or a drug. And to me, that is a miracle, but that's all I have. So thank you for listening.